Something else must be going on today. No, I mean,
let's
begin with a work session on House Bill 3640. So members know, and for the record, that bill had a has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means that we overlooked when we moved the bill out yesterday or day before. Was it yesterday? Just yesterday. Okay. So we need to bring it back and send it to Ways and Means. Representative Winters is the sponsor of the bill, and it'll probably go to her subcommittee so they can work it out there. So in work session, the chair would move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 3640. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair would move to reconsider the vote whereby the committee passed House Bill 3640 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair requests unanimous consent to withdraw the motion whereby House Bill 3640 was moved to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Now, the chair would move House Bill 3640 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Again, the bill had a subsequent on it when it came to us. And it's my understanding it'll go to Representative Winters' subcommittee. It's her bill, so we'll let her work the bill out.
Right. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Is there I don't think it has any fiscal impact, though, does it? No.
Why did she want to? I mean, I'm on that committee. I'll do that.
Yeah, it has the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. I think it's appropriate, too, since we passed this out, maybe by happenstance. I've heard from both Hunger Relief Task Force and Chuck Sheketoff on behalf of his group. They're concerned about this working crosswise with some of the issues that Hunger Relief Task Force and some of the other low-income and poverty and hunger advocates are doing, and they'd like a chance to work that out, and they think they can in Representative Winters' subcommittee.
Which one is it? Which subcommittee is it? Health and Human Resources? Yeah.
Okay.
I'm on that one, too.
Okay. So that's the motion. Joan, please call the roll.
Representative
Shea.
Aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Hughes.
William.
Hughes.
Leah.
Aye.
Vice Chair Charles.
Aye.
Hughes.
Chair
Shatterly. Aye. House Bill 3640 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation with referral to Ways and Means, and I'll sign that report as soon as you can get it to me so we get it down there quickly. Okay, we'll close that. Let's open a work session on Senate Bill 660.
Yes.
And let me tell you where we are on that. Committee, we will work this as a true committee effort. The chair's inclination would be to look at Senate Bill 660 as a vehicle addressing the access fees, not the the internet commerce aspect of the bill, and not the amendments that would reinstate the prohibition on the state's cooperation with other states in collecting or enforcing tax laws. So, Ed, if we do that, I'm sorry, Dick, if we, geez, you switched already. Dick, if we do that, we would be looking at the dash 10, as I understand. And are those the only amendments we would need?
Yes.
Okay. Jim Craven, do you want to come up for just a second? Or not? I think these dash 10s were pretty much yours, weren't they?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Craven, American Electronics Association. I originally worked with the League of Oregon Cities and Department of Administrative Services and some others, I think, on what were the dash 8s. And the dash 10s are just a slight winnowing down, narrowing of the dash 8s. So we would support the dash 10s. And I think others can speak for themselves. I think most of the parties that have contacted me, perhaps other than certain member of the executive branch, has expressed a support for the dash 10s.
Yeah. Any discussion? Thank you. Anybody, any questions for Jim while he's there at the table? Okay, any discussion, committee? What's your pleasure?
Trying to figure out
Well, we could be.
Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
Mr. Chairman, I move the dash A-10 amendments to Senate Bill 660.
Representative Witt moves the dash A-10 amendments to Senate Bill 660. Now, discussion on that? Any discussion on those amendments? As I recall...
Now, what's the difference between the 8s and the 10s?
The 8s, if you look, and I think there was an amendment suggested by Ms. Harchenko to the 8s, that's talking about content.
Internet access means, that's the difference.
Yeah, that's the difference is there, it's the definition of internet access.
Yeah, if you look on line 11 of the dash 8, it talks about internet access, include access to proprietary content, information, and other services, and that apparently, again, I don't pretend to understand all the places that takes you, but it takes you in.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Further reaches than it needs to go to get at what we want to do with pared-down version.
Okay.
Okay?
I'm good with that.
Representative Witt has moved the dash A-10 amendments to Senate Bill 660. Is there a discussion? Any objection?
Quick question here.
Sure.
Were these the amendments that were before Ms. Harchenko?
Yes. Yeah. I think not. It would be irresponsible to say that these are the ones that she favored, but I think she said that of the amendments that were proposed, these are the ones that caused her the least heartburn. Would that be a fair characterization of her testimony? Yeah. Okay. Any objections to the A-10s therein?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Witt.
I move Senate Bill 660 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Witt moves Senate Bill 660 as amended by the A-10s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beck.
I don't know how germane this is to the bill, but I guess maybe this is more behind the scenes stuff. But how many Senate bills do we have with relating clauses that allow us to problem solve in the next 2 weeks? And is this a bill we should be sending out or holding on to for any number of...
Well, I guess the question maybe is more to the issue, how long is our leash?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm
not long. I mean,
you thought of that.
Okay, anybody else?
No, I just... Let me take a deep breath. this bill is just seems to me very strange. It doesn't seem that... I guess I'm just not used to having these kind of bills come out of this committee, because I think, as one of my good colleagues said the other day, she knows when I... That means it's you. when a bill's on the floor from the Revenue Committee, she doesn't even have to look if she knows she voted yes on it, because so many of our bills come out unanimously. We do a very good job... thorough job of looking at important issues that affect a variety of Oregonians. And I just have to say that I don't see any merit in this bill whatsoever. I think it really seems, I can't even believe that we've spent so many days that we've spent working on this bill. It really doesn't do anything. There's really no purpose for passing it. And I feel that it's so... unlike any of the other issues that we've worked on, in that it's completely meaningless. So I'm going to vote no on it. We don't even have a sales tax. I don't know why we're voting to make...
Representative Witt?
Well, yeah, I'm going to have to disagree a little bit with Representative Kefouri on this.
Surprise, really?
Yeah, I know, it's shocking. I think what this bill does is it reflects in terms of state tax treatment what federal law is, and it affirms the principle that access to and use of the Internet should be tax-free in the state. It deletes the provisions of the proponents, which said any commerce that is done on the Internet is tax-free. I think that was objectionable to me, and I think it was objectionable to a number of us. And it also deletes the provision that the Department of Revenue or the state in general should not cooperate with other states relative to enforcing any taxes that they may impose relative to Internet commerce. So I think this is the reasonable and appropriate language. We stripped out those other things out of the bill. This will be saying the Internet as a source of information should be available to people, and we as a state adopt a policy that we will not permit taxes to be levied simply on the use of the Internet. And I think that's a good thing, because we want the Internet to be available as inexpensively as possible, because it's a great source of information. So, and I think this is very consistent and probably reflects federal law relative to federal tax policy. So I'm comfortable that it has an important and significant meaning without going to the point where I think some of us are starting to become uncomfortable relative to a taxation on commerce or directing the Department of Revenue not to cooperate with other states.
Representative Pass?
I don't see what it does. I agree with Representative Witt that maybe some of the owner's parts are taken out of it, therefore rendering it mostly meaningless. And Ms. Marchankiewicz, who is here, testified to the question, is this necessary? And she said no. So I'm not sure what the goal is here other than it reminds me of a memorial that we're passing.
We've done a lot of those.
Well, okay, let me try this. And, you know, this is not my take-home bill of the session, but, and I think, too, though, Representative Kefouri has talked about we don't have a sales tax. That's not what the bill is about now. And also, I think when Ms. Archenko was testifying, I think, too, she was addressing some of the other proposed amendments that got at the commerce aspect of the bill. If you look at the dash 10 amendments, that is the bill. That is the entire bill, because it replaces, except for Section 2, which is the effective date. And so what it amounts to in Sub 2 is a declaration that the state will not impose a tax on access, and it establishes basically a preemption, too, I think, it's a preemption on local government as well from establishing or imposing a tax on access to the Internet. So in that respect, it does something that is not in law now. I mean, that is what the bill does. It is a declaration of a policy at the state level of not imposing a tax, and it is a preemption on local governments with regard to the imposition of a tax or assessment on Internet access. So the other aspects of the bill that we heard testimony about that extended to the Quill, the Supreme Court's approach in the Quill decision regarding nexus and sales tax and relationship to catalog sales and those kinds of things are all by the by. They're not in the bill. Representative?
You had said at the last public hearing that the governor issued a letter of concern on this. Was that on the pieces that were taken out, or was that on the bill in general?
That was addressed to the bill, I think, as it came over from the Senate. And that included, in that part in particular, I think the most objectionable part there was the... I'm trying to think.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, uh-huh.
In the A and Gross version, Section 1B, it specifically speaks to...
Yes, there it is, the agreement with another state, yeah.
Right,
the
agreements with other states. And I think that's the main thing that Director Harchenko was objecting to. And I think there was some other testimony, and I think I objected to the ban of taxation on commerce, because it creates a two-tiered system, one where you have nexus and one where you don't, in terms of the sale of products and the impositions of taxes and the responsibility to collect taxes. So I think the Department of Revenue's objection, I think, has been addressed with the Dash 10s.
Yeah, it is purely an intrastate bill at this point in terms of its scope and effect. It doesn't have any bearing on the state's ability to participate in any kind of interstate or multi-state kind of agreement
And Mr. Chairman,
organization. Yeah, Representative Witt.
Yeah, those that maybe are having some reluctance, I would just encourage you to look at the Dash 10s as something that basically says that the Internet has a certain social, educational, public value good, and what we're saying here from the policy of the state of Oregon is we're not going to tax someone simply for the use or having access to use the Internet. That's all it's saying. It doesn't say that commerce can't be taxed. It doesn't say that we shouldn't cooperate with other states. It's simply saying that this is a social good, that we don't want to increase the costs through the use of the Internet, and what we're doing is we're prohibiting any taxation for the use of the Internet.
Chairman?
Yes, Representative Beck?
I confess to not having followed this all that closely, but would this prevent phone companies that also provide internet access, and there is a tax, and it's all reflected in your phone bill, and a tax on your total amount of your bill. This prevent great problems for various telecom providers in terms of segregating out what they can tax and what they can't, and just create problems, those sorts of things.
In response to that, no, I think the Dash 8s could have, because it talked about bundled services. The Dash 10s, I think that was one of the specific concerns in narrowing the definition of internet access and then specifying that it does not include telecommunications or cable services. Someone will bear me up on that. I think that is precisely one of the concerns were about the Dash 8.
Because
mm-hmm. If you compare that in the Dash 8 amendments, in lines 11 and 12, internet may also include access to proprietary content information and other services that are part of a package of services offered to consumers. And that blurred with...
I guess, Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
I don't know enough about what the future is going to be for the various services that are going to be provided to our house by telecom and internet providers, but if it's conceivable that there will be a PUC or the state will impose reasonable taxes on just providing some kind of overall service, they're going to have to segregate out what... I mean, we may be getting the internet over the cable or over whatever the television we're all watching, and I guess I'm concerned that down the road this could eliminate the possibility of taxing telecom...
Come on, Jim.
...telecom use and time on the phone.
I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, I am too, sir.
That's commerce.
So I have a date with the other committee shortly. For the record,
we'll send you with a note.
Just tell them to pass it, and I'll stay here for all afternoon. Mr. Chair, Jim Craven, American Electronics Association. I think that issue was raised by a member by the League of Oregon Cities, by DAS, and others, and that's why on lines 11 and 12, internet access does not include telecommunications services or cable services.
And that also correct, though, that's also why we took out the more cumbersome language there from the 8th and other... bundled services, basically. Yeah.
I think the core nut of this bill, and I think everybody who had those concerns about being overly broad have been heard in the process, and they have expressed a comfort level to me. I mean, they can speak for themselves. Is to say, this is not a theoretical issue. This issue has come up in a number of localities around the United States. City of Tacoma 3 years ago, whole state of Florida saw the internet as a cash cow. And basically implemented taxes. In other words, you've got your 1995 AOL account per month. We're going to slap $5 on that just because it's there and just because it looks like a great way to raise money. I don't think that's very popular with your constituents. And I think really there is a core nice little take-home bill here, and that's about what I'll say. Tell your constituents and tell, there is a preemptive language in here about local government, that we're not going to tax the simple access to the internet, and that's something we're making a promise to our citizens is what we're trying to do with the bill, and really nothing else.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Witt.
And Jim, this reflects federal policy, right? Isn't that what federal law is now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, until October of this year, there's a proposal to extend this ban, actually a proposal to make it permanent, but, you know, we don't know where Congress is going to go necessarily, so this would be state policy. It may be covered by federal policy, may not. It is only covered by federal law until October 2001 under current federal law.
Okay. Anything else? Well, let's see where the votes lie.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Please call the roll.
Representative Fay.
Aye.
Dash.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Pass.
Aye.
Williams.
Excused.
Rhea.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
McGorry.
No.
Aye. Senate Bill 660, as amended, goes before the due pass recommendation. We need a carrier. What?
We
Representative Bruce?
Yeah. Oh.
He did. Well, whatever you prefer. He testified here for the bill as it came over.
As it came over. Shall we? Let's do it. Okay. We'll make Representative Starr. Carry. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Let's go on. Open a work session on Senate Bill 519. Ozzie and John, would you please come forward?
He's given us. I just got it.
You haven't read it yet? You haven't read it yet? I'm counting on it. I'm going to read it myself.
Yeah. I heard about
okay.
it.
Okay. Do you want to say anything before we go to there? We've already heard 519. You've got some amendments. And I think that's probably what we want to hear about today. We've had several hearings on 519 and a couple work sessions. And Ozzie and John, I know you've been busy working some things on this too. So let's hear from you and let you tell us what you've got.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose from the Federation of Oregon School Administrators. I have a little outline. And I'll hand it out to you after I talk about it, but I copy and pasted from something else I did, and the bottom two bullets are irrelevant. They're from the, so I have slight error in that, and I'll share it. Talk to you about it. What we're proposing to do, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is to amend Senate Bill 519A and include proposals related to the changing in the funding and reaching equity on the ESD debate. And the ESD, as you know, a proposal was debated heavily on the Senate side and has passed the Senate. A measure has passed the Senate, Senate Bill 260. Subsequent to that development, the ESDs as a group came up with a slightly different proposal that they now, all 21 of them, do support. And what we are proposing to you in the amendments to 519, which I don't think the amendments are quite here, is that correct?
A7.
So I saw a draft of them this morning. I don't have a copy of A7.
John, have you got a...
Okay.
The committee, it is because we're looking at a 34-page amendment that I'm inclined, I think, not to move these today, but to take some testimony and let you respond to them over the weekend when we come back next week. So we'll have the exposition today.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and our rationale for asking that you connect what's in the ESD proposal and what's in 519 as it sits before you is that the superintendent's School Funding Coalition, in its work on funding for this session, as you know, you've had 20, I believe it's 20 bills introduced to change the formula in some manner, and they've walked through those and are supportive of two issues. One is an adjustment over a two-year period at the small school, high school thing, which we discussed earlier, and a set path to get to equity with the SDs. The proposal with the ESDs creates a five-year phase-in to achieve equity among the ESDs. It places limits or constraints on the revenue deductions for the high-resource ESDs just for the 2001-2003 biennium. It sets a minimum revenue target. All ESDs, when we're fully reach the equity level, all ESDs would have a minimum revenue of $1 million. It creates equity by including all of the ESD and local district funds, and it would work like this. You take any ESD and all its component districts, the amount of money that's supposed to go to that group of districts, including ESD, would be determined through the equity formula, and then 5% of that amount would be allocated to the ESD for the things that ESDs do. It requires that of that amount of money that's sent to the ESDs, 90% of it must be spent in accordance with the resolution process, which I think you're familiar with. Essentially gives control of the of those resources or how they're expended to the local districts. It requires that the Department of Education conduct a study of the SDs that addresses four issues. One, create a comparable definition of services to be offered by ESDs. Create a catalog of services that are currently offered by ESDs. Provide a correlation of service costs to a uniform chart of accounting. And identify where in the state there are deficiencies in the services being offered by ESDs. And I'm sure you're familiar with the argument that not all ESDs do the same thing, et cetera, et cetera. And this study effort is required that they make reports to the appropriate revenue and education committees during the interim with recommendations for the 2003 session. It moves money in this manner. It sets a target of where all the SDs should be, and then it determines the difference, where they should be according to equity, determines the difference. And for those above, those who are currently receiving resources in excess of where they should be, there's a gap. For those below, there's a gap. For those above the gap, for the large ESDs, they would they would lose 20% a year till they get out to the fifth year. It doesn't work out quite like that, but 20 and then more. But the concept is that in 5 years, you'd phase them down. And the extra money that's come from the growth in allocation to ESDs plus the money that's created by that reduction would be paid to the lower end ESDs, and so they'd ramp up in that 5 years. And they ramp up faster than the 20% year, depending on how far they are. That's the way the formula works. The constraints that are put on it in this biennium only, and they would sunset, so you come back here in 2003, they wouldn't be there. The large ESDs would not, they have the constraint, you lose 20%, but in no way do you lose more than 5% of your total budget from the prior year. For the smaller ESDs, they would lose no more than 4% of their budget from the prior year, or they would be flat funded on a per student basis from the prior year if they're losing kids rapidly. There's a either or for that reduction. And both of those constraints go away in the 2003 session. After you apply those constraints, all of the rest of the funds are given to the poor or low resource districts at whatever amount works out percentage-wise to distribute all the money to those school districts. Right, Steve? So far? Okay. The end result, one of the issues is what does it actually do? And the poorer ESDs, lower resource ESDs, are Northwest, Crooked Chutes, and Willamette are at the bottom. And under this proposal, with current, unless you mess around with the 5.2 and federal offsets and other things that are being tossed around this building, but under the current picture of money for schools, the 01-02 budget, Northwest ESD would go from 15 plus million, they go up 3.6 million. The next year they go up another 3.6, a total of 10 million in the 2 year period. And their 02-03 budget would be 39% higher than their 00-01 budget, the budget they're on. So in a 2 year span, they get a 39% increase in budget.
And those again were which ESDs?
That's Northwest ESD.
That's Northwest.
Crooked Deschutes, their numbers are smaller. It's 1.1 and 1.9, a total of 3, but their increase on their budget from this year to the second year next biennium would be 64%. And Willamette, and the numbers are different, but the budget increase from this year to the 1 year after next would be 42%. So it's making significant increases for the districts that are at the bottom toward getting us toward equity. Mm-hmm. And I know that you have to balance each of your balance, your own interest, and we've been through this with the school districts. We believe that this effort to make rapid, by the way, this is a much faster pace of getting to equity than we did messing with the local school districts. Do this and do the adjustment on the high schools for 2 years and get that kind of under control. They're still on the table on the other side, people talking about different transportation issues, different declining enrollment issues, different small school issues. There's an issue for almost any of you, and the facilities issue, which we've discussed here. And it's our recommendation that we take on these two, tie them together, and move on with this process.
Okay. Tom?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Marshall, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. This has been a fascinating experience. The ability to bring representatives of 21 ESDs all into a room and try to reach consensus on how to distribute a limited pot of money has been interesting, to say the least. What we're dealing with here over the two-year period is $230 million allocated amongst 21 providers of educational services on a regional basis. And each of those, I believe, fall into probably four categories. The first are the large, low-resource ESDs. And to jog your memory, perhaps, ESDs, the disparities of ESDs exist because of they had different levels of taxation, different voter approval of tax bases prior to Measure 5. Therefore, it created different replacement dollars from the state after Measure 5. So when we started looking at ESD equalization, after school district equalization was pretty well completed, there was a realization that one ESD was funded at $52 per weighted student and another ESD nearly $2,000 per weighted student. And the issue became, if all our students are going to be judged equally against state standards, there's a disparity and an inequity that exists given a student that has one level of services provided by the ESD versus another ESD that's providing much more services to students who are expected to reach the same goals. Back to the four categories. The large, low-resource ESDs like Northwest, and they, of course, wanted to believe that equalization ought to move quicker. The small, low-resource ESD, like Jefferson, again, that was one of the most low-funded in the state. They also, both of those being low-resource, a large and a small, they both desire equalization to move at a more rapid pace than the high-resource ESDs. You have a large high-resource ESD in Multnomah and a small high-resource ESD in Harney. So sort of four different sets of types of ESDs in terms of their funding situation, all with different ideas about how to achieve equalization. Over the last 19 or 20 weeks, as the Senate Revenue Committee has dealt with this issue, there have been numerous meetings amongst all the ESD superintendents, numerous computer simulations, and finally an agreement was reached in the proposal that we're bringing to you today in these amendments. And the issue is, how do you begin to recognize that you have to move the low-resource ESDs up while also recognizing that too rapid a drop in the large or the high-resource ESDs would do damage to their programs that they provide for their constituent school districts. And we believe that the proposal before you strikes that balance, and certainly the 21 ESDs that have now all agreed that this is a responsible approach recognize that it does strike that balance in trying to bring the top down a little bit and try to move the others up, again, operating within the confines of a limited amount of resources. If you wanted to find a money tree and throw in a couple $100 million into the pot, we could certainly satisfy the ESD equalization question and certainly the school district distribution formula questions much easier. But we're dealing with a limited amount of money, and we believe this represents a responsible approach. Because ESDs provide services to their constituent school districts, we believe it's important to marry, if you will, the school district distribution formula in Senate Bill 519 and the ESD distribution formula in Senate Bill 260, so that you can see side by side the change that the school district formula will make in school districts against the change in school district resources that will be provided through the ESD. We think that's extremely important. Another feature is that for the first time we are marrying ESD resources to the resources of their constituent school districts. So the of the resources in a particular region received by the school districts, each ESD will receive 5% of those. And then, as Ozzie explained, 90% of those then have to go back to the constituent school districts in the form of services to their students. So by marrying the two, not only in statute, but also in the bills, we think it's important that you'll be able to see side by side the changes in school district resources from both the distribution form, the school district distribution form, as well as ESD's change. And with that, I'd be pleased to respond to any questions.
Okay, questions? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, weren't we looking at working towards equalization on ESD funding anyhow? In other words, if you take a district like Beaverton, for example, which has a concern about funding for facility grants, bringing the ESDs into the mix here seems to me that it's not doing anything to help them, because I mean that policy was moving anyhow to gradually work towards an equalization of ESD funding. So I'm having reluctance seeing how this is addressing fast-growing districts that have a lot of growth and a lot of issues relative to new construction and new development.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Witt, I apologize if I implied that the resources that ESDs provide to their constituent school districts would deal with the facilities question.
No, I didn't suggest that.
ESDs operate differently. In the Northwest Regional ESD, they take their dollars per student and divvy those out to their constituent school districts in the form of service credits, so that those constituent school districts then can purchase the services they want back from the ESD. If there are services being provided to school districts by an ESD, and that can then somehow relieve that school district of its of operating revenue to be used for other purposes, I just think it's important that you don't look at a school district formula in isolation of the dollars that are in effect going to that school district from their ESD.
Yeah, and if I can follow up, Mr. Chairman. And John, I mean, more to the point, I mean, my concern is here is looking at a district like Beaverton that is struggling with growth. We're not fully funding the facility grant requirement, and they happen to be in an ESD that is severely, and I think inequitably, underfunded relative to the state average. My sense was last session we recognized that we needed to start working towards equity in terms of ESD funding. Yet, adding this provision to this particular Senate bill, which is diverting more money away from the formula for remote school districts, I don't think that it's doing anything to address concerns that districts like Beaverton have. You know, I mean, the ESD inequity which exists, I think there's a commitment to correct that over time anyhow. But in the meantime, we're not fully funding the facility grant, and then we're taking more money away by putting them into these remote school districts. And maybe you could respond to that, but I'm failing to see how this package really works for a district like a Beaverton or a Hillsborough. And I don't think it corrects current inequities, and I think it maybe compounds them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, you're correct. It doesn't solve the facility problem. It doesn't solve the declining enrollment problem for districts who see it through those glasses. It doesn't solve the Eastern Oregon folks who see the transportation that they can't count, and they have to drive a lot of miles, et cetera, et cetera. We're in the same quandary we've been in for every session in this decade of trying to achieve equity for all our school districts without increasing the resources by any reasonable amount. And what the package does, the package moves $10 million to the Northwest ESD. And yes, we can do that without doing the other. And of that $10 million, a little over a third of it would go to the Beaverton School District. And that doesn't solve all their problems, but this doesn't solve the declining enrollment problem in Coos Bay. We're saddled always with trying to make the best effort we can to contribute to everybody's solutions. And we're suggesting that this package of things does do that. And it doesn't solve everybody's problems.
it makes a substantial difference in revenue to Beaverton. I think it's $4.5 million a year in the small school thing. That's $6-7 a kid to Beaverton. So times their 40,000, that's 240,000 or so. $500,000 for the biennium, and they were going to pick up in the neighborhood. It's a little over $3 million, $3.5 million out of this side of it. So no, it doesn't answer all the problems. It makes it, it pushes the money in the right direction with the problems that they're facing. Again, if Senator Messerly were sitting there, he would be challenging the idea because it doesn't address the rapid declining situation that he has in Goose Bay. And we can't address all the, every time we address one, we unaddress or undress somebody else's problem. And this we would suggest to you is a reasonable contract or proposal given the constraints that you not you personally, but the politics or society, whatever it's doing, puts the constraints we have on the total amount of resources for schools, which again aren't totally decided because you've got some other issues on that table.
Representative Hass.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. First of all, I would respectfully disagree with the idea that these should be married together and that that makes some kind of sense. There have been other formula changes in bills that weren't tied to the ESD formula, and I don't see why then now at this stage of the game that we want to tie these together, unless of course it's for political reasons in an effort to get this bill passed. And if that's the situation, I just don't think that's a straightforward way to pass good policy.
Is that a question at the end?
It was a question.
Okay.
I think he meant, is that good policy?
I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, Ripley Haas, the one difference in what we're doing this time around that's never been done before, and that's tie the total funds of all the schools and the ESD together and divide them then in terms of creating the equity for the total pot of money. ESDs have been treated separately. And so in that sense, I think it is appropriate that you look at the decisions you're making at one time. If you're more comfortable that this goes in another bill, so be it. But the issues ought to be tied together because every one you make impacts the entire situation.
My name is Mr. Chair, and I feel like, you know, asking you questions obviously about the school formula is like throwing pitches to Mark McGuire. But the local option bill that we have, the ways and means that we sent down there,
right,
that to me seems like a more honest way to help small schools because it's new money if it gets funded. Isn't that correct? It would be an appropriation for the local
office. The bill that resulted from the measure that people passed last fall. Yeah. Right.
So I guess my question is, if this is that great of a need, why don't we do that here instead of effectively taking money from other school districts to take care of this problem?
Ms. Chair, Representative Haas, I don't think there is more money on the table. They've reduced that. I think they have to do that measure because the people passed it and said we're going to do it. And I think you know they've reduced the cost, or you did here, it's down to $1 million or less because of the shortage of money. And the kinds of things that we talk about, whether it's small schools, the ESD equity thing, we're not creating more money. We're rearranging the money that's on the table for them. And that's unfortunately the way we've been saddled this entire decade. I told you before, we're the only state that's tried to create equity in how we fund schools without putting more money into it. You've seen the drill. I'm not going to go through that again. And it's made it very, very difficult. I have spent a decade in the crosshairs of somebody's guns. Fortunately, they don't load them. But it's been a very, very difficult process because we've created equity by taking from some and giving to others. And in the process, we've underfunded the total system, in my view. And I think if you look at where we're headed over this next budget, and you're going to start hearing from your school districts, I suspect, on how the 5.2 rolls out for them. And it isn't just your district or your district or your district. All school districts. The numbers are different, but all school districts are in a mode of reducing program to live within what the 5.2 provides. and that's unfortunate. And we're struggling again with that same issue here. But it's the deck we're dealt with, and I think this is the reasonable, a reasonable approach to the issues that you have to deal with.
Further questions, Representative Beck?
And if we do nothing?
If you do nothing...
Yeah, on either of these.
On either of these bills, on 519, if you just let it stay here, then there would be no small... The small school thing would go away, and the money would just be distributed to the formula. If you do nothing on the ESD stuff, the money would be distributed, the state portion of the ESD money would go out through the formula, and because it's marginal money, it would kind of go on a same dollar per student everywhere, I think, wouldn't it? So most of it would wind up in... You're my technical advisor, remember?
Yeah, without an ESD.
Yeah, if we drop ESD language totally, then I think the ESDs, I believe, they're stuck with, they have what they levy locally. The state portion of the fund would go out to the school districts because it has to be distributed. So most of it would go on a per student basis. So it'd go where the kids are. Most of it would wind up in the large school. Oh, wait a minute. That didn't work out. I know Multnomah comes out short overall, don't they? That's a county.
Yeah.
So it creates a variety of different circumstances that we'd have to look at, none of which I think are helpful.
It also doesn't advance the ESD equalization that
right.
we have been
right. Yes. Right.
putting
yeah.
forward.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
I guess, Ozzie, you don't need to respond to this, maybe unless you want, but given what you've just said, we're the only state in the country that has gone through equalization without new money? Is that a...
I believe that's true.
If that's true, assuming that's true, it just seems we're taking one more step to validate that process, that form of equalization without new funding. We're maybe taking a few people off the hook with the small, we're easing some people's pain a little bit here and there. We're helping some, we're hurting a few others, but we're not really... I guess I worry that we're not that we should be doing this when we add more funding, and we should be keeping the pressure on people to have that be the approach rather than a few incremental changes that ease the pain for some and hurt others, and no pressure to fund the whole system more adequately.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, I think we have an obligation to the kids throughout the state to do the best we can with what we have on hand, and I don't think that approach would do that. I think you're obligated to move because there are kids in every county, every school district, and we get lost sometime in worrying about how that one compares to mine, et cetera, but there are kids everywhere, and we have an obligation to try to distribute the resources as best we can. I don't think you can back away, and I'm also not confident that the pressure you're talking about would be all that great if we didn't do it.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you. First of all, I wanted to clarify, because my first question related to Representative Beck's question, and that is, with doing nothing, we don't make a movement towards equalization. And is that the answer to that
question? On the ESD piece?
On the ESD piece.
So that's correct.
Putting that aside. And the second issue, and we had a conversation about this before, but I just want to get it on the record. ESDs are so diverse around the state, as I'm sure you're aware, and different school districts ask ESDs to do things that other districts don't. For example, I actually worked with what was then the Washington County ESD, and at the time the Beaverton District had their own film library. The Hillsborough District got their film library from the Washington ESD. The TAG program, I think, was in the ESD in the Beaverton District. They perhaps had it in-house. And what I'm trying to understand, because we had this conversation about what they do by contract, if you will, and what they use their general monies for. And I just want to feel confident that through equalization, we're not necessarily penalizing ESDs that have done a good job of creating resolutions and have actually attracted a number of different programs to their ESD that perhaps others have not done. I'm thinking specifically about early intervention services, early childhood special education, that I know a number of ESDs do. the Level 7 programs. Lynn Benton Lincoln does those. Douglas County does those. Our own Willamette ESD has a contract to do the corrections programs, the education programs for the youth corrections, Clarendon Hillcrest, and then I know that Harney even does Healthy Star at the home visiting program. So how do the general funds sort of combine with those contracts, or do they? Do they keep them entirely separate in equalization?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson, what this bill does is tell you that the state school funds, the general funds, must be spent 90% of it through the resolution process.
Mm-hmm.
It does not limit ESD's ability to contract and provide other services that the districts want. And you could contract in education. You could contract with Beaverton to have Beaverton do things for other districts or variety. But those arrangements are separate from what goes through the resolutions process. And to your earlier question about they're all different, and again, we're in some respects we're caught in the same web that we're caught in when we move from a locally funded to a state funded system of K-12 schools. There were, everything was different, and then we over time have tried to force them to be the same, and that's created lots of tensions. The same thing's going on with the ESDs. The ESDs are a result of historical situation, which are different decisions made different places by different boards, and now as you try to force a centralized funding system, see to it that every kid gets the right service they need, you've got to find some ways to equalize, quote, services, which is very, very difficult. And that's the study, the language about the study forces that discussion farther along. You know, some of the ESDs, before we created the unification of 3 or 4, 5 or 6 years ago, were well-funded, some weren't. And those were based on decisions those local school districts and their patrons had made about whether they did or didn't want or support an ESD. And some of the ESDs weren't very well-funded because their districts weren't very interested in having well-funded ESDs. They would rather have higher-funded local districts. And now you put them together, and we've got these inequities, and we've got to straighten it up. Because there are kids in every one of them, whether it's a well-funded or not so well-funded. There are young Oregonians there that are going to grow up to be adult Oregonians, and they have a right to some support.
I saw this battle from the other side for the last 10 years being on a school board that had a running feud with ESD in our local area, and we found out about the inequity of funding across the state. But it's really the same, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I want to try to have a good grasp on this, it's really the same situation we've gone through with the general fund. We knew we had to move towards equity because after ballot measure 5, the funds were coming from the state as a whole 70-30 split. I think the split on ESDs are about the same probably. And you can't have a situation where there's huge differences amongst ESDs as far as funding is concerned. Because behind all this is what we were talking about in our school board is a lawsuit. And you can say what you want, but if you're in a situation where funding is different from ESDs, significantly different from ESDs, someone's going to say, my kid is not getting the same service as the kid the next ESD is getting. All that money's come from the state. And that's what drove the first equalization, I believe, probably is driving this one.
Mr. Chair, correct me
if I'm wrong.
You're correct. By the way, that same decade you were fighting with that ESD, I was fighting with their superintendent.
Okay. Well, same battle.
Yeah.
Okay.
And to the last point, the good things in this bill, we're not solving your everyone's individual interest in their own school district. But we're not doing that for any of the 90 of you that are here. There are three really good things in this effort. One is we are moving toward, in a rather rapid, if you compare what we've done otherwise, equity amongst the ESDs. Two, we are connecting the total funds available to ESD for all the kids and with a 95-5 split. So the equity formula drives that. And three, we're telling every ESD, you must follow the resolutions process and spend 90% of that money the way your districts want it spent. And that, I think, relates to your last question.
It does.
Because it wasn't done. It should have been done, but it wasn't done the same way. So those are, quite frankly, most of the ESD people, not that isn't fair. There is great interest in the last two things amongst the ESD people as well as the equity thing. And there's great interest in those amongst the school districts.
A couple more questions, I'm sorry. You're proposing this in lieu of what's coming forward in 260,
Senate Bill 260 is slightly different than this, yes.
Right. And getting back to the marriage question that was down here, would you think that this amendment without what's in 519 is still a good idea on the ESD side?
Absolutely. If you won't put it in 519, you're going to get 260, and I'll be back here at the table asking you to put it in 260.
34 pages again.
Well, I don't know.
It'll have a new number.
Excuse me. Cindy and Steve worked really hard over the weekend to get it to fit 519. I don't know if they'll get it in 34 pages when it goes in 260 or not. You might give them some thought as you decide where to put it.
Representative Bates?
I think that one of the other problems here that the large, fast-growing school districts have with these two pieces is that while the ESD program is working towards equalization, you can look at the subsidy to small schools is actually going the opposite direction. It's not equalization by students. We do recognize there's a significant problem for small schools in rural areas maintaining services, especially the high school level. If we don't answer that, those schools will be in real difficulty staying open, and we have to give those kids an education. So I think that's the kind of the angst I'm hearing here from the districts that are growing fast. In my districts, I've got all those in my district. I mean, I've got a couple of schools that are really struggling because they're small and rural and the population is going down, and other schools are just doing the opposite. So I get a chance to look at the whole picture.
You lose either way.
I lose either way.
Are you in either way?
But it's a good, what I'm trying to get to, it's a good compromise. It's something that is doing the best we can with the funds we have available, and I think Ozzie should be credited for doing a good job in this. There's no perfect answer, and the equalization program we've gone through in the last 5 years where we split a set amount of pie thinner and thinner and thinner instead of holding some districts harmless while we're raising others up to the same level would have been the appropriate way to do it, but we didn't do it. We elected not to fund schools at that level, which I think is a real shame. We underfunded and underfunded and underfunded for 10 years, and this is just another piece of it.
Anybody else?
Mr. I think I testified on this bill earlier. We had a hearing in 519, right?
519.
Okay. And my point, I think, that I made is that the superintendents who are a cross-section of the state that worked on this went through the drill that Representative Bates just went through for you, is that there are small high schools that aren't going to provide and can't provide the sciences and the math and the music and stuff. They flat can't do it, and we've got to address that. And all we did was put in here for 2 years a temporary reprieve to say, okay, what, and we've got good or better data now, and the department has the ability to really track what's it cost to put if you're going to let people have school districts with high schools of 75 kids, and I don't think you're going to change that. There's an argument you should or shouldn't, but as long as you're going to let those exist, we have an obligation that they have at least enough curriculum so those kids have a shot at a CIM, a CAM, a good diploma, entrance to college, or whatever they're going to do. And that's what's behind the amount of money in the it's a temporary thing. It'll go away if we don't have a better solution. But that's what's behind the small school thing. It isn't the equity question in that yet. But I thought I think I went through that earlier. I must not have won that point either.
And Mr. Chairman,
yes,
I might add with a little bit of advice that when dealing with the school distribution formula, there are no problems that exist that more money can't solve.
Okay.
Would anybody like autographed copies of the Joy Heisman poster in Madison Square Garden?
Who's Joy Heisman?
Who's Joy? You don't know, you don't want a poster.
Am I supposed to know?
I don't know either.
University of Oregon.
Joy Harrington.
Oh, Joy Harrington. Oh.
That's a Madison Square Garden poster of the side of a building. Goodbye. Thank you.
Is that a sports action lottery?
Are you pulling Vikings?
Unwittingly.
Vikings?
See what happens under that formula?
We will take this up again next week. And I'm running up against my available time today. Anybody else want to be heard today? Lori, briefly? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association here, just to speak in support of these amendments that have been brought before you today. And I'm very sympathetic to the fact that you all feel it's your duty to think in terms of what does this bill do with respect to your own school districts inside your legislative districts. But I would implore you to think about the statewide implications of the education policies that you all have to confront as well as you make that balancing act and that decision. I sometimes can be particularly sensitive to that because I'm a mother. I have two kids in the Portland Public Schools and who would arguably not necessarily be the immediate beneficiaries of cash drawn away from that particular urban school district. And so I can look at that same set of amendments with those eyes as well. But I think that the bigger question for the state, given the resource adequacy issues that we can't solve this session, it appears, this is something that I think COSA and OSBA deserve a lot of credit for coming up with. And they grappled with this issue from kind of a triage perspective. Yes, there are significant, important questions with respect to declining enrollment, small schools, urban schools, high-growth schools. You've all heard the litany of all of those issues before. But of those issues, which one is in the greatest degree of crisis? If all of those superintendents, many of which took a look at those runs and voted for this, given that they knew they'd have fewer dollars if it were to come to pass, could do that, I would suggest that all the rest of us can. OEA respectfully urges your yes vote on this amendment and follow their lead as we are doing.
Laura, you favor, as a matter of policy, the marriage of the ESD formula with the K-12 funding formula.
Mr. Chair, yes, OEA does support that, both for political reasons and I think for other reasons as well. As we experienced, especially on the Senate side early on, with all the various distribution formula proposals, figuring out what any given proposal does in isolation doesn't really help you in the final analysis. This bill, by marrying those two, gives you a run that shows how they both interact with respect to those school districts, and I think that's an important point.
Questions for Lori? Lori, I want to thank you and Ozzie and John, too. It's easy to look at this as the finished product, and it looks pretty straightforward. I know, Ozzie and John, you've been working on this since January of 1933. really, this has been a session-long ordeal for the two of you in particular, and I appreciate the fact that you come to the table representing a statewide constituency, and Lori, so do you, wherein your members and in your constituent districts, you've got the winners and losers, and they're all there, and yet you're able to come and, representing them, recommend this to us as the appropriate best answer given the constraints. And I appreciate that. That's not easy to do.
Thank you.
Okay, I think with that, Steve tells me that there'll be some corrections probably over the weekend as they work on fine-tuning this. Paul, let's see about, we don't meet tomorrow, let's see about Monday. We'll plan on a meeting at 1 o'clock. We also will have a 9:30 meeting, I think, on Tuesday is being set up. Have you heard about that yet? 9:30 meeting Tuesday with the Transportation Committee to receive some in-depth report on that, the truck, flat fee study. The flat fee study. We need to spend some time looking at that, and Representative Starr has asked if we could coordinate with their committee, the Transportation Committee, and so I think we're looking at Tuesday at 9:30 to do that and hear from the Department of Transportation on that. So with that, committee, thank you. We will be adjourned. Have a good weekend, everybody.